Bridging the digital divide, that's what Nicole Pinker does every day. The Kansas City, Kansas native is a nationally recognized leader in the area of digital learning and founder of something called the Digital Youth Network back in 2006. 3 years later, the Digital Youth Network and the Chicago Public Library opened the first U Media Lab. That's a 5,500 square foot space dedicated to learning through hands-on experience. There are now more than two dozen such labs across the country. Nicole Pinkert is an associate professor at DePaul University's College of Computing and Digital Media. She holds a PhD in learning sciences from Northwestern, and she speaks at the Kansas City Public Library tonight. More on that in a few minutes. And Nicole, nice to have you. Welcome to Kansas. Welcome back to your roots here.
Thank you.
Is it nice to be here for you?
It was great. I finally had barbecue. I hadn't had it in a long time.
Well, I bet you you don't get that stuff where
you
are.
I won't eat it unless I'm here.
And that's exactly the right attitude, by the way. Well, you say the definition of literacy and what it means to be literate in this country is changing every day. How so?
Well, what it means to be literate has always changed and has always been connected to the technology of our time. Before the printing press, literacy meant the ability to orally recite. The printing press meant it was cheap to send books, so everyone needed to learn to read. And so with the creation of the internet, the mobile, and Wi-Fi, it's easier for us to send videos, songs, and sounds to each other almost as quickly as we can send text. So in that sense, what it means to be literate, you have to be able to create and consume those types of digital artifacts.
So today, as your website says, digital literacy is literally the new literacy.
Yes, but it's based upon, and this is where I think sometimes trips people up, you can't really be digitally literate unless you're traditionally literate. You have to write. To create a movie, you have to write a script. To create a song, you have to write the lyrics. Mm-hmm. So these are just the final product is in a digital format, in a video, in a song, or in some sense like that, or a game. But the traditional literacies are core to creating those new forms of literacy.
You know, you are dedicated to overcoming this thing we all hear about all the time, this digital divide. I'm wondering what kind of progress that you're making, and I know you're making some substantial progress. And what's the scene in Chicago looking like these days when it comes to that issue?
Yeah. So, yes, there is still a digital divide, but it's less about the technology and it's more about the opportunities to participate. I mean, most kids or in homes have even a PlayStation or a game box that is connected to the internet or mobile devices or maybe a computer. So we have access, but kids don't necessarily have access to the programs and the training that develops their skill sets. There's the assumption that kids are digital natives. They're digital consumers. They're born probably digital consumers, not born digital producers.
So they can play games, but maybe doing much else becomes an issue.
Yeah, they can't create them.
Yeah. You know, your focus is on digital media, and you're talking about what there?
So we focus on digital media and how do students understand how to consume everything that they take in, but then also how they know how to create it. So how do they understand how to represent their ideas and thoughts through the form of creating all these different digital artifacts, a video, a game, a song, a visual representation, an app. Now you have to bring in the ability to create apps. So how do you bring that all together so that the same games and apps that they're using on their phone, they know how to create?
Yeah. Do we know for sure, is there a connection between kids who fall behind on technology and kids who struggle academically? Is there any question about that?
I wouldn't say that there's a direct correlation between being digitally savvy and doing well academically. And part of that has to do with the ways in which kids might be taught and how they're tested. So most of the ways we understand what kids can do is based on these traditional forms of tests, which few of them are designed to really take advantage of new forms of digital literacy at their core. So I think there's often a disconnect in what we've seen in our work. Many kids who are very successful in creating digital artifacts don't do well academically. And part of that is an engagement. They see that the ability to create with digital, it represents them as more connected to them, and they put more time and energy into that, whereas they're disconnected oftentimes in the traditional forms of education that takes place.
Oh, that's interesting. Can you fix that? Can you change that?
Yes, you can. I think we're being forced to change it. One is we're trying to break down the barriers between out of school and in school and sort of help kids understand what they do in out of school has relevance for what they do in the in school. So we've done a lot of this in Chicago with the U Media location where kids are developing their skill sets, their digital skill sets, and then we work with schools and we work with the teachers to bring it all together.
Yeah.
We did a project before U Media when we worked on the Southside School. We followed a group of kids from 6th through eighth grade. And we compared their digital skills at the beginning to their digital skills at the end of the eighth grade to a group of kids in Silicon Valley. And our kids in Chicago ended up with greater digital skill sets than the kids in Silicon Valley.
I was floored by that. And there was some measurement you had where there, in terms of their number of times they interacted digitally during the course of a day. Mm-hmm. Help me there.
Yeah, so we look at it both on breadth and depth. So how many times have you ever done something? So how many times have you created a game, created a visual, created an app? So 16 types of digital artifacts. We asked them, have you ever done it? And then we asked how many times you have done it.
Yeah.
So have you done it more than once? You know, so we can, most programs will probably let you do things once, but how many times do you actually get to do it more times? So the kids in Chicago had more breadth and more depth of experiences. And that was because we had integrated the out-of-school and the in-school. So they were learning, we had media arts class in the school day that developed the base set of digital literacies.
Yeah.
And then in the after school, they can go and focus on what their passion was. So if a kid really was passionate about digital video, they would come to the digital video after school program on Wednesdays.
Yeah.
If they were passionate about visual design, they would come to that on Tuesdays.
Oh, that's really interesting. And they loved it, too. It lit them up.
They loved it. And I think one of the interesting things is that the teachers, because we were developing the kids' skill set in the let's say, media arts class in the school day, using artists who are professional artists by their own training, the teachers weren't responsible for teaching it. And so we found that our teachers, really our more experienced teachers, were phenomenal in integrating digital work into their classroom if they didn't have to be the ones to teach the kids how to make a video.
In fact, you found that having the teachers integrate the new media was maybe not all that successful, that it didn't work as effectively.
Well, no, the teachers were good with it as long as they didn't have to teach it. So if you're a science teacher and you say, okay, I'm fine with students doing a unit on understanding and exploring who their science heroes are and creating a video, but I don't want to take 2 weeks to teach them how to make a video. If you can come in and show me that the kids already know how to make a video, I can come up with a tremendous number of projects that can integrate it. And that makes sense. They're paid to be a science teacher, not to be a digital video instructor. So we developed the core literacies, and then we worked with the teachers to integrate it into their curriculum. And we found our more experienced teachers were better at the integration than our newer teachers, who you would assume would be more technically savvy.
Is this the new education frontier?
The digital?
Yes.
Yes. I mean, we don't have a choice. If you think about how much media you consume on a daily basis across all the different devices that you use, if we're not making the ability to consume and produce that a core literacy for everyone, then we're handicapping our kids and we're handicapping our society.
You're talking to a guy who teaches journalism here at UMKC, and sometimes when you talk to kids about, you know, little concepts like commas and periods in this digital age, they look at you like you've got nine eyeballs. And I'm wondering, how much frustration do you find with kids these days? How willing are they to engage in the traditional concepts, which you just said a few minutes ago they've got to have, when they'd rather be out playing with the new gadgets they have down the hall?
It's all process, right? So the reality is, if you don't understand story structure, you're not going to make a good movie. And so you're going to create something that you're not going to be proud of and happy with when you show it to others. And so it's all about how you hold them accountable for saying, well, where's your treatment? Where's your story before you actually get to the point of using the camera?
So, how does that fly with them?
It flies when they see it, when they experience, and when they have failure, when they create something that, you know. So an example, we do a history fair in Chicago, and some students make movies. So you'll have a kid who will just jump directly to the camera, and of course their video gets low marks.
Mm-hmm.
And when you say, well, explain what the story is, let me see the story, and they don't have those documents to prove that, you can just immediately show them another kid who's done all the work, all the prep work, and just show the script. So, for example, we had a group of kids who spent a summer making a movie. They spent half of their time actually writing the script, and they went through 25 versions of the script before they got to the movie.
Wow.
But they understood the importance of that, and so they iterated over those commas, and they understood the importance of getting it right, because it's more costly to mess up on the back end.
That's interesting. So if they can connect the value of learning the basics on the front end to what they're doing later on, I imagine there's some incentive to figure out what periods and commas are all about.
Right. And so then that's about how you also integrate the instruction. So you have your writing teacher working with your media arts teacher. And so they might work on the story structure in the writing or in the social studies class and the content in those classes. And then you're working, they bring that to with them into the digital media classes.
I should point out that Nicole will be speaking at the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library tonight. You can go to our website, kcur.org, and get more information about her event. It'll be at 6:30 this evening at the Plaza Branch. kclibrary.org also has more information. You can go there to get a seat. We're talking with Nicole about digital learning. She's a nationally recognized leader in that area. You mentioned something a little while ago. There's something called the U Media that was set up just for 9th through 12th graders at the public library. What was the idea there, Nicole, and what, again, is U Media?
Yeah, so, you know, growing up in Kansas City, we spent a lot of time at the school. So I was at school every day probably to 6 or 7 o'clock because I was always playing sports. So the school was a safe space and a learning space. But if you look now in many places, and particularly in Chicago, I can't say the same here, schools close at 3 o'clock. And so really there are no places where youth can be, where they feel comfortable, where they can congregate, and everyone's not concerned. Why do we have all these youth here besides the mall?
Right.
So we said, well, hey, the library said, we have this space. Why don't we reimagine what a youth space can be in the library? And so they asked us, and
there's an opportunity.
Well, when they asked us initially, I was like, you want us to do what? You want to bring our digital work into the library? Kids aren't going to want to come downtown to go to the library. But I got convinced, and we said, let's try it. And we did. And then we never had to recruit kids to come. They saw it as their place. It had a recording studio. It had over 50 Macs and PCs that they can use. But more importantly, they can come in and just be. They didn't have to come in and go directly to a class. They didn't have people following them around. They didn't have to bring their younger brothers and sisters. It was a place for high schoolers across the city where they can come. And what we then put is mentors in the space who would then talk to them and figure out what their interests are and then engage them in doing activities.
So they weren't teachers per se. They were mentors.
They were mentors. So they're media artists who've been trained. So they've go through a lot of training with us. But they're a musician who in the evening is playing at House of Blues, but who leads the digital music. There's a poet who has performed nationally. So they're actually working with artists.
These are volunteers.
No, they're paid.
Oh, really?
It's important that they're paid because you need them to show up every day and you need them to take their job seriously. But it works for them because, you know, they're working in the midday and then they do their craft at night. And many of them desire and want to work with youth.
You know, you mentioned that this space, this U Media space at the public library had like 50 Macs and a recording studio. You know, that all sounds great. And I hear that and I think that costs money. And I'm wondering, how did you bridge that challenge and the library help out with that? And what's been the solution across the country?
Let me be clear. This was all of those costs were accrued by the library. And if you think about it, but the library already had the space. They already had the librarians. So bringing in the technology is a once every 4 or 5 year cost. Right. In fact, local foundations paid for that. Mm-hmm. And then we got grants to do the mentoring to demonstrate that it's possible. But if you think about you're having 70 kids, you know, you might have 70 to 100 kids here with only 4 staff who are present. So the amount of the cost, if you do per kid, isn't actually that high. And this is a library space that's used, you know, all day, 9 to 9 every day.
Now, at some point in all this, you have some of the kids themselves actually developing classes, Nicole. Do I have that right?
Yes, yes.
Where does that come in, into the mix here?
So normally we work with kids from 6th grade, and now we have some kids who are 25, and we have 25-year-olds who are now teachers and some of our mentors. So we believe, and actually it comes from my experience growing up here. I had phenomenal mentors. I was a basketball fanatic, so everything for me was around, you know, basketball. I wanted to go to KU. I wanted to be the next Lynette Woodard.
You still play?
I still play a little bit. I'm getting a little old there, but I still play a little bit. So mentors are important, and mentors are essential. So, and they're long-term connections. It's not about let me meet you one day and then it's over. Uh-huh. So we wanted to build that type of model, and we wanted to instill in all of our youth that you have an opportunity and a responsibility to give back. And so high schoolers mentor middle schoolers, college students mentor high schoolers, and and college students are getting mentored by professionals. Yeah. So it's a link, a chain, and everyone has to connect and support each other.
What are some of the types of skills that students are developing in your programs? Because in one of the videos, I noticed that students were shooting fashion photographs.
Yes. So we have the sky is the limit. We change it depending on what's happening in society. So we have a lot of e-tangibles, maker. I don't know if you have any maker spaces here. So the ability to 3D printing. So we have e-fashion, where girls are, and not just girls, but mainly girls, are using electronic thread and creating their own T-shirts, jewelry that lights up and can respond and connect. If the phone rings, it can light up.
It's just amazing. They would love that. Of course kids love that.
And it's not that, the reality is not that difficult. It's really more to say, oh, this is possible. So our job is to make the possible visible, and then to show them step by step many small milestones how to get there, and to empower them to get there on their own also, to show them the resources that are available online. Mm-hmm. And one of the important things, and I talked with this from the youth here I met last night, is the importance of having showcases. I use the example of basketball. You don't want to be something that you don't know exists. Mm-hmm. So a student is not going to want to create an app if they don't see that another kid has created an app. Mm-hmm. So you need opportunities, showcase opportunities for students can see what everyone around them, what some youth around them are doing. So they're
that's
like, hey, I want to do that. You know, if you could do it, then I can do it too. But if you never see someone doing it who looks like you or from the same city as you, then you believe it's something that other people do. That's something that you can do.
So how does all this apply to traditional learning, like bringing some of these techniques into English class, for example? Are you seeing that now?
Yeah. I mean, we do it, and then others in the – we work a lot with Chicago Public Schools, and we have a new initiative with them called CPS Connects that allows out-of-school learning to count as in-school learning. So, for instance, let's say computer – everyone's concerned about not having enough computer science graduates. So I'm a computer scientist, left here. Learned at I went to Sumner Academy, had like 5 computer science classes before I graduated from high school. And when I went to Stanford, I felt comfortable being one of the only African Americans, one of the only women in the program because
wow.
I had learned it here.
Right.
So they're learning all the technical skills, so how to create apps, all the computational making. They're learning how to present, how to communicate. They're learning all the digital skill sets. They're learning story structure.
Yeah.
They're learning editing. They're learning all the traditional literacies just put within a new format in terms of how do you apply them to digital artifacts.
Well, Nicole, again, will be speaking this evening. Nicole Pinkard at 6:30 at the Plaza Branch of the Kansas City Public Library. Go to kclibrary.org for more information to get a seat as she talks about digital learning. What an interesting conversation. Good luck with your work.
Thank you.
Thanks for sharing your expertise with us.
Thank
appreciate
you.
It.